Post-Harlan Monologics. Number 00022. Recorded on February 24, 2023. Production location, Post-Harlan, Texas. Exorcise. Diet and Exorcise. Chapter 22.
The opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88.
So I'm sitting at the desk in my office this morning, hacking away at my website. Maybe I should say, right while I'm here at this moment, what I'm hacking away at is a little side jag, a little side hustle. I'm doing additional podcasts to this Post-Harlan Monologics within the scope, but kind of off on to the side. Dealing with what I call recovery topics, right? Recovery topics, and that is recovery involving alcoholism, drug addiction, stuff like that. 12-step recovery topics. So any of you listening that might have an interest in that, you go over to the Post-Harlan Monologics website, find the podcast section, and look for a link to recovery topics, and you can join along with that. Okay, that being said, I'm at my desk this morning and I'm kind of hacking away with that portion of the website. I think this morning what I was doing was uploading one of those recovery episodes. And I just got this waft of odor come over, like into the office. Which is a god-awful stank, right? But I know the smell. I know the smell. My wife knows the smell. It's the smell you get when my pit bull barfs, right? He pukes up some shit, he gacks and bleh, and there's this unmistakable odor, this smell. You know it if you smelled it, right? And I smelled it in there, and then it went away, and then it came back, and it went away. So it was like, it was going through my office in waves, you know. It was like ebbing and flowing with this stench, this nasty stench. And I came out to get a cup of coffee, and my wife was heading out the door, and she smelled the smell, and she was complaining, no, that's Henry puke is what that is, and it's somewhere in here. She starts looking for it, can't find it. You know, we flip on the light in the living room, and, you know, Henry usually will just puke, like, in a corner somewhere. He knows it's the wrong thing to do, so he will try to do it in the rightest way possible. Not this time. This time, he just, on the couch, but I don't know how he did it either, but he went under the cushions of the couch. Like, he stuck his nose down underneath, shoveled up one of the cushions and just threw up underneath on there, and then put the thing right back down neatly, like he was trying to hide the shit or something. Henry's a smart fucking dog. I don't know that he's that smart, but there was like a blade of grass visible. Grass, like, you know, lawn grass, green grass in the backyard type of grass. And, you know, you're thinking Henry puke, and then you know dogs eat grass to force themselves to throw up when their belly's upset. You put two and two together, and he threw up on the couch somewhere, right? So I pulled up, and I found all that disgusting shit. And my wife turned her head in disgust and went out the door, and I cleaned it up, right? I cleaned it up, and, you know, poor Henry, he was sick. He threw up, but I had to give him the what for to make sure he knew it was wrong, you know? You got to speak to a dog and a dog's terms, and you get to establish those terms by, well, I don't want to get into all the ins and outs of training a dog. Henry knows a certain tone and inflection in my voice. He hears it, knows that he's done wrong, and he immediately drops his head and, you know, lets his ears down and shows that he is indeed guilty, right? So I was laying on the old, what they call Catholic guilt, right? Which I guess I could do. I guess I got a little bit of latent skill where it comes to Catholic guilt, having had been raised as a child as Catholic, and then even married to one, right? I was married to one. Actually, I was married to two, technically. Yeah. But the other one kind of, the other one was insane. I don't even want to talk about that. Just completely insane. Bad person. Wife number one was good. She's Catholic, and she's a Catholic family, so Catholic guilt, and, you know, it's a whole thing. I don't want to get into all that. That's not the point. But I laid that guilt on Henry, and he felt it, and I just let it go at that, you know? I didn't have to smack him upside the head or anything like that. I didn't have to go that far. He knew he did wrong, and it is what it is, but and that's not even like the story. That's just kind of like the beginning of it, because I'm in the bathroom, right? I'm in the bathroom, and some guy isn't like, you know, locked up in one of the stalls, just kind of pooting away and shitting and, you know, it's like fucking fireworks, real disgusting. And that same exact smell. He had the Henry puke smell coming out of his ass. And I'm like, oh my God, what the fuck does a person have to eat to smell that badly, right? And then, you know, the dude's like huffing and puffing. Like he couldn't breathe. Like I thought he was like stroking out or something. But no, he was just breathing. Which I have noticed some people do. You know, some people we got here. You had bathrooms, quiet place with high acoustics, right? All the tile and everything. So you hear all kinds of shit. And, you know, sometimes literally, sadly. But, of course, that's the place to do it if you're going to do it. So, congratulations to all you men who shit in the toilet. That's a step in the right direction. Fucking low-life, characterless motherfuckers. But, yeah, some of these guys, it's just, well, the lifestyle, and I've talked about it before. All you do is eat, sit around. Maybe you smoke. Yeah, usually they're smoking, eating, drinking, and trying to fit their job in between all that, those activities. And they're just sitting on a toilet taking a shit, and they're huffing and puffing. It takes that much exertion out of them. And it's like, I thought the guy was going to fucking die, you know? But it reminds me. It reminds me of, you know, my what I call my fat Elvis years, being overweight. It's just like that. You're just carrying so much extra on you. Everything is a fucking chore. Everything is uncomfortable. Everything is unhealthy. And yeah, you got to get into a whole different lifestyle to overcome that shit, which, you know, fortunately I did. I came from a very athletic background. I mean, from the time I was born, but even before I became Fat Elvis, I was big muscle bound motherfucker. I spent 15 years in a gym, basically, right? And so to get back to it was kind of a normalcy to me. I already knew what to do. I just had to go and do it, and I had to go and knock off good 60 pounds to get right again, you know? And I managed to do that within 5 months, you know? Diet and exercise, diet and exercise, diet and exercise. And what I was doing back then, I guess you'd call it pretty radical. You know, I think what I do now, maybe more so, what I was doing then to get to that place was I would eat one day and I would not eat for two, right? So it's basically you eat one day, you don't eat for two. But all three of those days, you do like 45 minutes of cardiovascular exercise. And then you do that for like 21 days in a row. You'll drop 20 pounds doing that. Now, half of it's just going to be tired. You're really just dropping like 10 pounds that way. But hey, if you lose in 10 pounds every 20 days and you stick with that, scale it out over the months. There came a point in time where I couldn't do the exercise anymore because I was kind of living out of a suitcase more or less for a couple of months, right? Didn't have the cardio equipment to roll with. In fact, I had to sell it off or give it off. Did just something with it. But anyway, with that, I had to kind of like up the ante with the fasting, right? That's what I call it. My dieting was fasting. Instead of, you know, 2 days without food and 1 day on, then it would become maybe three, right? And, of course, I would watch what I ate. On the 1 day that I would eat, it would be pretty much anything goes, right? But now it became like sticking strictly to protein food, for example. I remember when I was living out of that suitcase, as I say, I was eating a lot of rotisserie chicken, you know, just going like to the Walmart. I was living out in the country. All there was a Walmart to get. And I'd get like one of those and I would eat that and then not eat for another 2 days, you know, that sort of thing. So I'm doing the keto, you know, the ketosis type of diet, while at the same time starving myself. Now, lo and behold, I lost a lot of weight pretty damn fast, right? This whole new person all over again. But that's what you got to do. It's calorie counting. That's what it boils down to. And then, you know, you could, with the ketosis, theoretically, you're challenging your body to burn fat while you still continue to eat. You know, the idea, it's like the old Atkins diet, right? You eat protein, or protein and fat. Stay away from the carbs, so your body doesn't use carbs for energy anymore. It's forced to use fats and proteins. And theoretically, it'll go to the fats first. And when you're doing that, you're in that state of ketosis. Ketones do something to promote the transfer of energy from fat to glucose or something like that, whatever's useful in the body. You know? If it is glucose at all, I don't know. Maybe the ketones become the energy that you expend. I don't know. But it comes out in your piss and you pull out these little sticks that you pee on and it changes color to tell you what state of ketosis you may or may not be in. But that was a thing for me. And I did that for all those months. And I kind of maintained that style of living for all these years since, right? I mean, we're going back to that point a little bit more than 7 years, you know. So that's 7.5 years of living within the parameters of this kind of lifestyle, which as I get older seems to get more and more radical, right? It gets more and more radical. I fast a lot more frequently for a lot lengthier periods of times than I did back then. But ultimately, I mean, there's a lot of things going on with a body when it fasts. And not the least of which, but maybe the often most disregarded, is the cleansing factor of it. Now, you'll hear it. It's not like an unknown or a mystery or totally disregarded. But cleansing, you know, and a lot of people talk about like quote-unquote gut health, you know, the idea about cleaning out your guts and all the parasites and shit like that in there. And yeah, that's absolutely a part of it. But I take it to a spiritual level. You know, there's a cleansing that occurs with that. And I guess I'll get into that in a minute. But, you know, the fasting, you know, and ironically, I've heard this at work, right? The term intermittent fasting. I've heard it other places too, but it just seems like lately through time, it's just, you know, to me, it's kind of faddish, okay? I'll just put it plain. It's kind of a faddish thing. On top of all the other fads that have never fucking worked, now you finally get to the one where your diet includes not eating, right? Because that's really what works. That's really what works when you get down to it. And, you know, to me, intermittent fasting is a very good idea, except the gaps of time between meals is really insufficient. It truly is. I mean, for some people, I guess it's helpful because, you know, again, it's a matter of counting calories. And if you skip a meal, that's a lot of calories that you would normally have in a day that you're not having. And I'll tell you what, you know, when you're overweight, out of shape, the slightest beginnings that you make towards getting right have a lot more impact. But as you go on down the road, your body demands more and more of you. And so does your fortitude, your mind, your will, right? All your discipline, everything like that. But intermittent fasting, you know, to me, all that is skipping a meal. It's that simple. And for, you know, another fast that I don't call a fast, really. Because I think fast is the elimination of food from the diet. That's how I look at fast. In my church, in Orthodoxy, or Orthodox Christianity, we do a very, what's regarded, you know, as a very severe, very strict, very rigorous, and very long-term Lenten fast, right? Roman Catholics have their Lent fasts, and the Orthodox too. And the Orthodox have kept it from the beginning the way it is. Roman Catholics have kind of deviated from it over time. Theirs is a lot less demanding, we'll just put it that way. But the Orthodox one is known to be the very demanding one in Christianity. And what that is it's basically a vegan diet that lasts for 40 days or 42 days or whatever it is. I'm not a mathematician. I think it's a little in excess of 40 days, maybe 42, maybe 45. I don't know, something like that. And the only exception is the allowance for shellfish for whatever reason, which anybody who goes and converts into Orthodoxy, and when they hear that, it's like, well, why shellfish? I mean, lobster tail, crab legs, shrimp, that's kind of good food. Why would we allow for that? You got to think it through, you know. I thought it through, and then I asked the priest about it, and it came down to, yeah, it's a matter of blood foods. You don't get blood with shellfish in the food, whereas with pork and chicken and meat, you know, beef, mutton, all that, they're all blood foods. And I think there's something to that, something about that. And the priest or the deacon, one of them, somebody, some clergy I asked about that, kind of concurred. There's no hard rule about it. This is a tradition, right? This is tradition, and this is not religion. If you don't fast, you're not getting stricken down and sent to hell. It ain't like that, you know? It's a tradition that Orthodox people hold up to and suffer through together as a sacrifice, as a means of being closer to God. See, and a problem with me is that before I ever entered into that sort of thing, before I entered into Orthodoxy and then took on these fast periods, I was already doing fasting that was way more radical as a normal part of my life. And I'll get into that in a second, but it, you know, what the details of it are. But it makes like this Lent fast seem like not a fast at all. A, you're eating, you know. The suck part is you don't eat the staples of my diet, which are meat. I'm a carnivore, you know, generally. That sucks for me. And I'm a big guy and a strong guy, and I kind of rely on my strength to live. I'm that kind of person. Sorry, you know. As physical as I am, I'm equally or probably more so spiritual, which is good, right? It's a good balance. Deeper into Orthodoxy, and it doesn't apply to all, but when it gets into monastic fasting, right? You've got monks, Orthodox monks. Like I'm going to say, not all of them. In fact, most of them don't. I had read or seen somewhere where at least a certain sector of monastics, of monks, don't eat on Mondays, Tuesdays, or Wednesdays at all, every week, all year, year after year. And then they abide by regular fasting protocol, right? That put the idea in my head, but it was of how I set up my fast, my routine, the way I live generally, right? I fuck it up, all right? Don't get me wrong, but generally speaking, I am human after all. Sadly. After what I smelled in the bathroom this morning, yes, sadly I am human. But drinking that decaf coffee, it's part of the fast right now, right? Anyway, this three-day thing that the monks do, these particular monks anyway, is about the cleansing that I mentioned earlier, right? It is all about the cleansing. They have determined it takes 3 days to process the effects of food out of your body, generally speaking, you know? To just get all that crap out of your bloodstream and all that crap out of your guts and, you know? And it pretty much adds up because I've done a lot of that sort of thing for 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, 6 days, 7 days. I've done 10 days. I've done 12 days, right? Without food. And I keep data on it, right? So I see like how my weight fluctuates and I could tell over time, you know, what happens in the process. And, yeah, early on, I could see in 3 days, you basically expend all your carbohydrate type of schizoid, spastic sugar energies and a feeling of sickness that comes with that, which you wouldn't know unless you were rid of it. We'll get into that in a minute, too. Plus all the gunk inside of your guts. All gone. That's how it works for me. That shit is all emptied out by the fourth day. When I get up in the morning and fourth day and I jump on the scale, I'm pretty much emptied out. I'm pretty much emptied out at that point. Not completely, entirely, but I mean to a point where it's virtually all gone, right? I don't know how to put this stuff in words without putting the words in your mind and drawing pictures for you. I don't want to do that. Giving you what could be important information here, so let's stick with that. But so these monks do this 3 days of cleansing. Their fasting is just to clean out their system, and then they start eating again, which dirties up the system again. But then they clean it out, and they live in this kind of balance, right? And their eating never tends to get to the point where they are so encumbered by what happens to the body when you're eating continually. And I'll get into this. I'm telling you, there's something to all this. But yeah, 3 days of cleansing that it takes. And it makes me think, you know, I mentioned about this little side jag. Here's a side jag about a side jag, right? You could tell I'm becoming professional with my podcasting at this point. Side jagging about a side jag. I mentioned earlier about the recovery topics podcast I'm doing on the side of this project here. It made me think while I'm going through it. Now I'm going through like my years in recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous as I'm speaking, right? I'm speaking a monologue, but it's focused on all those things. And I remember a little thing I had between a couple of friends of mine, right? I had my AA sponsor, and then he sponsored another guy, right? So there was like the three of us. We were kind of like this triad, and we did stuff together. They were both a couple of years, well, they were both like 10 years older than me, and I was kind of like dragging along, but I was in these conversations with them, and it's actually something that, and I pat myself on the back, it's something I came up with. The idea that every time I had put myself in a situation where there was alcohol involved, right? Because when you're recovering alcoholic, you want to stay away from that. They call it playing on the railroad tracks, right? You're going to play on the railroad tracks, you're going to get run over. So anytime you put yourself in a situation where there's alcohol, it happens in life. You might be on the job and they might be having a Christmas party or what, you know, shit like that. In your family, your friends, they have weddings and there's drinking. You can't say no. You know what I'm saying? You can't completely avoid this shit. So, but in those moments when you find yourself in that situation, it could be that you're just on a date, you know, you're taking your wife or your girlfriend or on a blind date, you're meeting somebody in a restaurant somewhere. And then you're at your table and the people at the three tables around you are all, they're drinking and getting a little loud, right? The idea is when you're in a situation where there's drinking going on while you're a recovering alcoholic, Now you have like this 3-day latency period where it's like the devil's got you in a weakened position and he's doing things, fucking with you emotionally, fucking with you psychologically, you know? And I said that to these guys, and these guys were so, well, one of them sober like as long as I am, right? But he's older and wiser. And the other guy was sober, you know, my sponsor, like 5-6 years more than me, right? And older and wiser on top of that. And they kind of concurred, you know? And we would actually, when we would sponsor people, we would tell them this. And it sort of, for a little while there, became a thing. You know, the old 3-day rule in AA, 3-day rule. But that's not like strict Alcoholics Anonymous. That is like fucking, that's like Maverick 88 shit right there. But it made me think of that. So you got these 3 days of cleansing. And that's a physical thing, which becomes spiritual, which is what I'm coming to, right? And then you got this the psychological thing that happens, 3 days of cleansing, you know? You got to cleanse yourself to be away from drinking situations as a recovering alcoholic to get fucking back to your last degree of quote-unquote normalcy, if that even applies, right? If you know, you know. And then of course I think like, well, what other 3 days? And the first thing that comes in my mind, 3 days in Hades, right? Jesus Christ was crucified and was buried for 3 days. And on the third day he rose, right? But those 3 days, what did he do? He went down into Hades. What was Hades? It's the netherworld, the place of the dead, right? And, he went and basically, you know, waved across the chasm at all the people that wouldn't believe in him. And let them suffer in torment, and he collected up all the sons of Abraham, you know, everybody who was on the side of comfort was actually brought out of the power that Satan had. Satan lost the keys of death, all this stuff, right? All this stuff, and it makes me think of that also. There's really something. I know people like are really into numbers and numerology. I am not that fucking guy, right? But there are some times when numbers really seem to have a serious relation to one another. And you're looking at what I just described here, you know, monastic fasting, the AA 3-day rule, 3 days in Hades. You've got basically a cleansing that's going on at physical levels, at emotional and psychological levels, spiritual levels. See what I'm getting at? Something about 3 days time. And I gotta think more about that. So, and I mentioned before now about my fast, right? Now my fast is sort of kind of like that monastic fast, except instead of it being 3 days, it's 5, right? When everything is right in the world, I don't eat during the work week. And then I go crazy on weekends. And I mean crazy. I eat whatever the fuck I want, you know. And come Monday morning, I don't eat again for 5 days. That's when things are normal, you know. It's not an easy thing to do. I'm sure you're like, holy shit, really? How the fuck do you do that? I can't even skip a meal. I can't do the intermittent fast. You work your way up to it. It's a discipline. It's a practice, you know. And I've worked my way up to it, and it's not usually a problem. But there is times, you know, there is times. I'll tell you what my weakness is in surviving that plan. Boredom. I fall into these states of boredom. And by it, I mean, it's not that I don't engage myself in people and in projects. I have plenty of interests. I cannot seem to make the hands on the clock turn as fast as they ought to be. It's like if I do a task at work, I know it takes a half hour to do. But like by Wednesday or Thursday, it's only taking me 5 minutes and I've got 25 minutes left to do other shit, which would be good if you really wanted to run around and do all kinds of stuff, you know? But I get to a point where it's just I'm done with my own personal projects, like this podcast, writing music, all the other stuff that I do, the responsibilities I got at the house domestically, the chores, the maintenance, the upkeep, all that shit, the job, like I mentioned before. There's only so much I have in me in a day that I can accomplish. And my days seem to get shorter and shorter the more I'm fasting, right, the further along into a fast I get. And I end up with all this time left where I'm just really not enthused about anything. I did the things that I had set out to do for the day. And yet somehow there's still all this time left. I don't, maybe my performance increases. That's worth looking at, right? The possibility after 3 days and you're cleaned out, you're actually functioning on all cylinders again. And I can tell you, I got a massive tranquility that comes with it. I live in peace. I'm to the point of doldrums, you know? It's like, oh, it's almost too peaceful. It's like you need somebody to come start a war with you just to get your blood moving again, right? But it's incredible. But that's my typical fast. And, you know, I'll fuck it up. Yeah, one day out of the week, not too bad. You kind of break even in terms of losing weight. If you go 5 days and don't eat and then eat like crazy on the weekends, you end up losing like 2 pounds a week. And if you've got the patience and discipline to go through that, 5 weeks, you lose 10 pounds. And I'm not talking about 10 pounds of turd. I'm talking about 10 pounds of fat, right? Actual fat deposits on your body go away while you're eating on weekends. Ice cream, barbecue, meat, you know, all that shit. And whatever you want, right? And it worked. I did it for 6 weeks in a row last summer. I enjoyed my summer on the weekends. I sweated it out during the week. And I ended up losing like 12 pounds of body fat. Nice, right? But when you fuck it up, you kind of neuter it. And if you really fuck it up, like I just did last week, I don't know what the hell happened. I just kind of lost my discipline. And it ate at me gradually. But I ended up eating 4 or 5 days in a row. And see, because I'm so used to not eating until the weekend at this point. And this is what I mean, what I said earlier about our dieting getting more demanding as we go along, right? I am so accustomed to not eating 3, 4, 5 days out of a week that when I eat more than 2 days in a row, I actually start to feel physically sick, right? We talk about the cleansing and the monastic 3-day diet. Well, you're cleansing of what? Some kind of filth. And we'll just, whatever that may be, it may be something physical, it may be something mental, psychological, it may be something spiritual, maybe all the above, it may be some of the above, but it's something, right? It's some kind of quote-unquote filth that we need to be quote-unquote cleansed of later on. Well, I get to a degree of that filthiness after 2 days of eating that I feel like I'm sick, like I'm poisoned, like somebody poisoned my blood. Like somebody took a needle and put some poison right into my fucking veins. I do not feel well at all at that point. So immediately I have to get into the 3 days of cleansing. And you can feel day by day. I feel better than I felt yesterday. And it's always like that. And as far as I've gone, 12 days, this day was always better than the day before in terms of the way that I felt. And it's something worth really getting into here for you spiritually oriented people, whatever your base of faith may be. Lifting of the spiritual fog, right? This is something that I encountered the last decent fast that I did. A couple of weeks ago, I went 7 days without eating. I was meaning to go 14. I made it halfway through. Shit got fucked up. But that's it. That's the humanity of it all. But I went 7 days. And what I was able to observe in those 7 days, I was actually keeping notes, right? I was actually keeping like a little journal. To make observations, because you know, when I did the last time I did like a 12-day, I noticed like on day 9 something was really changing in me. Like my eyes were opening up, I was seeing things differently, my tastes were changing. I had this sudden onset to like learn the Russian language, right? Read War and Peace, which I've had my whole life. I could have done that. I never did. But I ordered the book and I started reading it, right? It just, where the fuck did that come from? It's just a couple of very odd examples. I was learning. I taught myself the Russian alphabet, and I was starting to learn words before I kind of fell away from it. Because I got off my fast and, you know, gradually fell away from it. But I got to this point where that changed me. And I wasn't expecting it. So I wanted to kind of chart, if you will, log, chart, a progression, what happens day to day in terms of my outlook, and see how it relates to this starvation, right? And what I was noticing was, like, every day, it just, I would start my little, like a diary, my journal, whatever you would call it. I'd start into it, just typing up. And it wouldn't be long before I was talking about, like, it felt like a little cloud, like, broke. And I could see a little bit clearer today. But I said the same thing the day before, and I said the same thing the day before that. You see what I'm getting at? Every day seems like the fog kind of clears a little bit more. The clouds break a little bit more. But there's still always clouds left. So you're going, like, through all this layer of atmosphere spiritually. It's breaking away. And the more it breaks away, the more translucent that which remains becomes, and the more I'm able to see. And the more days I go along, you know, eventually you probably come to a point where you see it all. See it all. God knows how long that takes. But, and then on the other hand, on a darker level, there seems to be a whole lot less antagonism from within. Now, let me explain antagonism from within. It's simply like this. Remember the old cartoons, right? We used to watch in reruns, Bugs Bunny and all that shit. And your cartoon character would have to come to a decision. And on his right shoulder, there would be a devil saying, yeah, stick it to him. Get him, right? And on the other shoulder, there'd be an angel saying, now, you know better than that, right? Your conscience, right? But you got this little, these whispers of good and evil. And the whispers of the evil start to become fewer and far between. You notice less of a presence of that in your thinking. And when a thought like that comes at you, you're just like, that ain't me. You could feel a separation from it. Where when you're full of all that quote-unquote filth, that spiritual filth, while you're eating away, you have no cognizance whatsoever. You can't tell. You could tell that a thought may be wicked, but you can't tell that it ain't you making it. It's hard to explain. I hope I'm getting it through. But anyway, yeah, you get this lifting of spiritual fog day by day as you starve. And it's fascinating, you know. Other things, your skin clears up, right? The whole thing, it's weird. Here's something. I had a psycho girlfriend a long time ago, right, when I was significantly younger. Those of you who know me would probably know her. I'm trying not to get into any details of it, but she was a nut. I had my share of those in my life, you know, let me tell you. But anyway, I remember this one thing, and the reason I remembered it was because I decided I was going to make a band, and I was going to use it as a band name, right? This is why I remember it. Yeah, but this girl was talking at me some kind of shit, and then I responded to her, and she was like, well, don't you go and get all physical-sophical with me. She meant to say philosophical, but she said physical-sophical. And I just thought that was great. And I said, did you say physical-sophical? What was I supposed to say? I said, the word, I think, is philosophical. And she started cracking up, and I started cracking up, and there you go. I started drawing up, like, fucking logos and album covers. I was ready to go. I just needed to, learn how to play music and get other people to play with me. But, yeah, physical-sophical. Why do I bring that up? Because this fasting thing is, it's both physical and sophical. Sophical, of course, pertains to wisdom. Wisdom relates to spirituality, at least in my corner of the woods. And, yeah, so it's a physical-sophical thing. We're going physically, we're going spiritually. We're doing nothing, and at the same time, both of these aspects of our existence are improving progressively through the days. It's amazing, right? It's amazing things. And so I say, you get all these really, I talked about some of these spiritual results and psychological and mental results. But physically, obviously, you're losing weight, right? And what I found is you lose 1 pound of fat a day. All right? Now, you may starve yourself for 3 days, and on day 4, you might see that you've lost 13 pounds. Well, 10 of those pounds will be turd and water, you know, your salt releases. It lets the water fucking out of your system. And I'm generally carrying around 10 pounds of that stuff. Maybe a smaller person carries a little bit less, a bigger person more. I mean, your results will vary. But for me, this is what I've observed through years, right? Through years of keeping data on it. It all boils down to 1 pound a day of fat, which is thought to be 3,500 calories, right? So I'm burning 3,500 calories a day. And I'm not taking anything in, so it's coming off in body fat. So that's some of the physical. And for clarity in the skin, you know. Day 4, after the 3 days of cleansing, I'll go in the mirror, you know, to like the shave or whatever, brush my teeth, and I can see immediately my skin tone, my flesh tone has gone from something kind of pale to something kind of colorful. You know, and it has nothing to do with being out in the sun or anything. It's just all of a sudden, I got a healthier look about me. The green in my eyes is brighter. You know, I got these green hazel eyes. Sometimes they're brown, sometimes they're green. The green comes out. It's just something that is happening when we're cleansed, you know. Again, not just spiritual, not just psychological, but also very much physical. We are getting healthier. And I don't know why it is that doctors have to say, oh, you have to eat. That's not... Doctors, they must know biology. They must know physiology. They must know that a person who's constantly eating and then taking medication is killing themselves. They must know. But they all say the same thing. Anytime I'm at a doctor and somehow the conversation of diet comes up, well, you know, I haven't had anything to eat for 5 days. Well, you can't do that. I do that. And my diabetes has gone away. And my heart problem, my heart disease has gone away. Right? I had clogged arteries. No, I don't. They're gone. They fucking gone. Had a heart attack. That cleared up one of them. There's a stent in there. The other one that was clogged up, it's virtually got no deposits on it anymore at all. The doctor who went and scoped me to find that out was mortified. He was one of those, you can't do that. You can't not eat for 5 days. And you can't go without this heart medication that you were prescribed 10 years ago. You can't do it. Bullshit, right? Bullshit. Anyway, I don't want to get into that whole medical fucking thing. I got issues with that crap too, all right? Again, so much of what I'm saying here about the fasting is both physical and, of course, spiritual. And the spiritual part of it is what really matters. I am saying that the things that we ingest have an impact on our spiritual condition. By that, I mean our conscious contact with God. The flesh that we carry in our humanity that makes us physical entities works against our spirituality. And any of you who are Christian that read the New Testament and read Apostle Paul's writings know this. Know that we struggle. You know, the Holy Spirit comes into your soul. It lives in your being. And a fight ensues against what the Bible calls the flesh. The flesh needs all this shit that the Spirit don't. And it causes all kinds of guff and havoc. To lead a spiritual life, to pursue the things of morality and all that's good in creation, requires you to overcome the flesh. It's a practice, a spiritual practice. I find it to be true. I find it absolutely to be true because of the frequency of my fasting and the length of my fasts. The fact that I'm a data person and I've kept data on it all, I can report a vast difference in being between a state of cleanliness in fasting and a state of filthiness in eating. And then when you're done with dealing with the food, then you got to add in the liquor and add in the narcotics, and in the psychotropics and all the other medications like heart medications and diabetes medications in your system that actually will work against you succeeding to break through the clouds of layers of fog that I described and make contact with the creator of all things. Yikes. Yikes, yikes, yikes. 40 days in the wilderness, okay? That's where I learned to fast from. That's why the Lent fast seems like, yeah, what? I usually suffer with the Lent fast because I end up putting on all kinds of weight because I'm eating all kinds of shit that I don't normally eat, right? Just hasn't really worked well for me. I abide by it, and I just got to do better at starving through it, you know? Just not eating, period. But I learned about fasting, not eating, starving through the Bible. That's what Jesus did. When Jesus fasted, what did he do? He went 40 days in the wilderness and ate no food, right? 40 days in the wilderness, ate no food. Where did I see that at? That's pulling up the Bible right quick. Yeah. You allow me to pull up the dictionary. Will you allow me to pull up the Bible? It was in Luke chapter 4, right at the beginning, I think. Yes. So Luke chapter 4, verse 1, and going on. Then Jesus, being filled with the Holy Spirit, this is right after he was baptized, right, by John the Baptist, returned from the Jordan River and was led by the Spirit into the wilderness, being tempted for 40 days by the devil. And in those days he ate nothing. And afterward, when they had ended, he was hungry. Go figure, right? Go figure. But 40 days, right? Now, I mentioned about, from a spiritual perspective, as I fasted, it seemed like there was less and less in a way of little devils on my shoulder whispering into my ear. Temptation, right? I'm pretty sure I said something to that effect. Now here you got like the prince of all the devils, right? Satan, Beelzebub, has the devil put aside for me. I can't hit that note unless I twist my nuts really good, but I'm not doing that right now or anytime soon, in case you were wondering. As I read this, it occurs to me that it takes you 40 days without food to actually make contact with Satan himself. That may or may not be true. That's how I perceive it, and I should probably talk to my priest about that, see what his opinion is on the matter. But what I can say is, in 12 days, you don't deal with Satan directly. But you overcome a lot of temptation and a lot of shit. You ignore a lot of whispers of temptation, and it seems that a lot of devils have fled from your system. They might go out when you shit or piss or whatever, however it happens, I don't know. They're physical entities that grab onto your flesh. They're spiritual entities that grab onto your flesh, and it's like a physical thing, and no different than I have a spiritual essence inside of me that'll be released from the flesh when I die, right? Though they're like hitchhikers, unwelcome, unwanted, and they bring you down. They cause ailments. That's why when Jesus was freeing people from demonic possession in the gospel stories, suddenly things like their blindness was lifted or leprosy was eradicated. You see what I'm saying? Like there was physical ailments that were tied to spiritual entities just nagging at people. There's a relation between the two. And there's also, you know, talk that Jesus had eventually with the apostles. The apostles were given the power to do this, the power over demonic possession in people. And they were going around and they were freeing people from demons, but they got to this one guy that they couldn't help. Right? They got to this one dude that they couldn't help out. And they went back to Jesus and said, well, why couldn't we do that? And Jesus said, well, this particular one requires prayer and fasting, right? So what does that tell me? A guy like me tells me there are different levels of demons with different kind of power that you cross paths with after a certain amount of cleansing of your body and soul, okay? Certain days of fasting bring you into contact with certain demons. And when that contact happens, it's not like a shootout at the OK Corral. You don't go face to face with the guy. They're devils. They're sneaky. They're hiding in the shadows. They live in darkness, right? And you just defeat them, and you don't really know. All you do is keep on not eating, and you defeat them. Because they need whatever it is you bring in when you ingest stuff. They live on what you're living on. I don't know how it all works. I don't know if anybody knows how it all works, but it seems to work like that by my experience. So you clear them out, and then the next one comes up, and they just keep coming. They just keep coming, and it looks like they keep coming for 40 days. And I think any one of you or me who would not eat for 40 days would probably be fucking dead, you know? Thankfully, the Son of God, Jesus Christ, God in human form, Emmanuel, God with us, the Messiah, a little bit stronger than the ordinary dude, okay? A little bit. I don't think any of us would live to see 40 days and meet Satan head on. I don't think we get that option. But there's a lot of things that happen along the way, a lot of things that we can overcome and defeat. And when we do, we may find things like diabetes and heart disease flee from us. Things like blindness and leprosy flee from us. I don't know. I've seen it with my own eyes. I've experienced this shit firsthand. Maybe it's true. Maybe it ain't. I don't know. Give it a whirl. And what the devil does, you know, he did what he did to Jesus after 40 days in the wilderness was very similar to how he dealt with Eve in the Garden of Eden. He preys on your vulnerability through your physical cravings. You know, we equate so easily from the beginning of our breathing, you know, ourselves with our body. It's kind of like the basis of racism, right? You look at somebody and you see their skin, you recognize the color, and then your thinking goes with it from there. That person is that person's flesh, right? No, the person is a soul inside of that. That's just trapped in that fucking carcass, right? And we begin to look at people in that light, you know, realizing that there's something in there that is not red or white or black or yellow, you know, brown. There's something in there undescribable, but it's a physical essence, a spiritual essence, right? A spiritual being in its own right. How did I get off on that? Well, the physical cravings part, right? We identify our body with ourselves, our flesh with ourselves, and we're wrong about that. We're wrong about that. But as long as we do that, if our body is hungry, we have to answer it. Why? Because it's me. It's me that's calling for food. Well, it turns out it really is not me for calling for food. It's this flesh. And in and amongst that flesh, it's not the flesh itself generally. It's these beings that are depending on you to feed them. Wow. It's fucked up. And we have to go through all our days, 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 years, dealing with this conundrum, right? Right? But so we have that vulnerability there. It's a weakness. It's an inherent weakness that humans have while they're in their third dimensional condition on Earth. And the devil preys upon that. The devil knows this, and the devil, all he's got to do is take the demons that are attached to you like little hitchhikers and just kind of turn them up a notch or two, you know? You're going to hear them loud and clear, and you're going to think that you're really hungry, that you're really dying. And I go through it, and I fail all the time. That's what I'm saying. My regular diet, what I've prescribed for myself, 5 days no food, 2 days pig out. Well, on Wednesdays, I fuck up frequently. It happens. The challenge is always at hand. I'm not saying that I'm some kind of fucking miracle person that can do this stuff when so many can't. I fail too. understand that much, all right? But this is the devil's ways I'm talking about. And it's all, that's only one of them, right? Your weakness is your attachment to your body. Yeah, and you're weak in different ways. It's not just food. Sexually, you know, things like that. Your morals start to come in play, and there's an attachment between morality and flesh. Not in every case. Some of them are... some of the spiritual, or some of the laws, the commandments are spiritual in nature, right? But some of them are physical also. Anyway, moving along from that. Other things, you know, Satan does, you know, what Satan did with Jesus, what Satan did with Eve in his brand of temptation was the challenge, the relationship that you have with God, right? It's like, I know that I am, by the face of Jesus Christ, directly connected to the creator of all things, and I have absolutely no doubts about that whatsoever. It is the most important thing in my being. Satan will challenge that. Satan will try to find cracks, fissures in that concept. He will chip away at the foundation that holds that construct of thought into place and try to cause me to doubt not just the relationship with God, but God entirely, right? So that's way number two that Satan goes by. And then the other one is this great offer of power, right? Satan, as the prince of the powers in the air, ultimately is given dominion on the earth. And that's why we have this situation that we're in with so many demons about, right? And Satan, the prince of them, he's been allotted authority under the rule of God to allocate resources any which way he wishes to, right? And that he'll do. That he'll do eventually. If you get to him where he's tempting you directly, then eventually he's going to hit you with the first one, and he's going to hit you with the second one, and then he's going to come to this third one, and he's going to give you an offer of power. Offer of power is similar to like Robert Johnson at the crossroads, right? Tune my guitar and give me the satanic power to impact the minds of anybody who listens to my songs and give me control over them. You know, make the women crazy over me and, you know, stupid and possessed, basically, right? That's the basic idea of it, but you know, in a greater sense, what you have is, you know, the situations where people are brought to submit to Satan in order to rule over men, right? That's something that people crave, that they lust after power. I don't understand that. I'm not like a power-oriented person. I never really was. Now, let me rephrase that. I never was. Power was just not a driver for me. The need to control others was never a drive for me. So I don't really inherently get that, right? Not every evil is something that drives every one of us. We all kind of have our certain areas of weakness. And power was just not a craving of mine. Greed in general. That's another area. I'm just not like that. That I have to have for money and all the stuff. And you can't have none. And That's not my area of flaw and failing, but it is for so many others. And this is what it is. You know, you get this opportunity, you got that ambition, that drive to rule over other men. Here's Satan able to hand you that power. And what does he do it for? What does he do it in exchange for? For you to submit to him, basically, as your God. That's the deal. That's the deal with the devil. And if somebody says that they're making a deal with the devil, that's the deal. That's the deal. That's how it goes down. And that makes you think, though, okay, all the powerful people in the world, all the quote-unquote leadership around us, if this is the means by which power is gained, what kind of people are running this show? Right? Think about that for a minute. And when you see it in that regard, then you look at me like a low life, like a workaday fucking Joe. Not a low life. Maybe to some of your high-mindedness, you might see something. Somebody who does custodial work, building maintenance work, you know, as like the lowest rung on the ladder. perhaps you might see there's a little genius to the whole idea of this living by humble means, right? Because I'm not tied in with all that crap. I've been in corporate America. I've been in Fortune 500, Fortune 100 companies that they want your soul in exchange for your paycheck. And if you want to get a little bit more power, you want to get a little bit promoted and you get a raise, they're going to want a little bit more and more out of you. And that's just the way it goes. These businesses, they want more. They demand more. The more you give, the more distance you put between you and your family, you and God. For us recovering people, right, our jobs get challenged. We can't make as many meetings, for example, right? But to just have humble means like this, a job with predictable hours, you don't get paid much, but you got more than you need. That's my life. I got way more than I need in spite of my humble means. And what? In the afterlife, where will I be in comparison to somebody, say like Adolf Hitler, you know, for one wild example. A man driven for power, who had the power. Now what? So there's a genius to it, I think. You know, I think what I'm doing here, not exactly by accident. There's a little bit of thought. Doors open, made it so. But I'm kind of down with it. I may grumble and groan, but a little bit of genius to it. But nonetheless, still, low-life motherfuckers. Low-life motherfuckers. Not only did I get out that bathroom, you know, or not only was I in the bathroom and that guy was stinking up the fucking place, smelling like my dog Henry's puke out his ass, right? The next guy come in, he just walks in, hucks up a loogie, spits it into a trash can like it was fucking nothing. And I'm like, dude, did you just fucking huck a loogie into the trash can? To him, it was nothing. I'm like, man, we just went through fucking pandemic era. We've just gone through a winter where there was like four different kind of illnesses going around. Don't you have it in your head that like if you spit, people spit up shit like that, just leave it to the open air, you know? And he's like, well, hopefully there's no germs in the trash can. The rest of the story is I got to pick that thing up in a couple hours and turn it over. What if that fucking loogie falls out on my arm, you know? It's like you're just spitting right on me. Low-life motherfuckers. But here I am, the low-life custodial building maintenance guy who's given y'all an education. I had to attain higher spiritual heights. Amen.
Thank you for tuning into Post-Arlen Monologics. Please understand that this project is meant to be part of a long-term archive as a series of snapshots reflecting a distant past. We are not seeking advertisers, but may at times accept private anonymous donations to help mitigate production costs. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post-Arlen Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at postarlen.com and at onsert.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@postarlen.com.